I give away millions. I pay millions in taxes. And maybe that's where I'm often misunderstood.
2025, what's the quickest, smartest way to become a millionaire?
There is an amount for most people, 99.9%, but it's not a million because a million isn't enough. All these things are free. And these are what make you happy. And I thought, yeah, that's expensive. That's expensive. Having the time to do that's expensive, and that's bloody expensive. I haven't been fully cancelled yet. I mean, I'm trying, but why not me? What's wrong with me? Yeah. If I came in here and I stunk of weed and the weirdest aftershave, and I had a bag full of cash, and I wouldn't even look at you, and then when I did look at you, I grunted at you, and I was aggressive at you, and I trolled you, and you'd be like, what the fuck's this guy on?
What have you learned about selling that is universally true?
Rob Moore.
Zach and Jack.
Thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
What do you think people get wrong about you?
That I care about money more than I do.
Interesting.
I mean, I love money. And money isn't everything until you don't have any. Then it fucking is. And I think there's a lot of bad education out there about money, that it's not as important as it is. Like, if you want to put a nail in that wall, you need a hammer, because you're not doing it with your hand. So if you want a good life, you need money. It's the tool, we've agreed, that replaces barter. And even the most wokey, lefty, hippie, spiritual, or whatever other generalized money hater person believes, they don't want a shitter car or a shitter house or a shitter holiday. They want to go to the best places in the world. You know, I saw someone on LinkedIn, you know, because that's where all the wanky content is.
Yeah, yeah. Love it. As we know.
We have a bit of a ding-dong on LinkedIn. And yeah, someone said, all these things are free and these are what make you happy. And I thought, yeah, that's expensive. That's expensive. Having the time to do that's expensive, and that's bloody expensive. But because I'm one of the most outspoken people probably in this country about money being a useful tool and it having upsides, and defending, you know, commercial people or defending us against massive tax hikes or whatever, people think I'm more money focused than I am. I give away millions. I pay millions in taxes. Maybe that's where I'm often misunderstood, or what they don't know about me.
So what do you think is the one thing people get wrong about money? What's the most common thing that you see?
Well, they just don't think it's as important as it is. I mean, all right, you could say billionaires do, but actually it's the power that they're after, not the money. But if you want a good life, it's expensive. Like, you want to wear nice clothes, they're expensive. You want to go to nice places, it's expensive. You want to put your kids into a good school, it's expensive. And it's just got more expensive with the VAT added. Fuck Labour. So wake up and understand that money is a tool. I don't judge millionaires for being good or bad. I just know they're good at making millions. I don't judge zeroers for being good or bad. I just know they're not good at making millions. They're good at something, just not good at making money. And if we neutralize our emotion around money and just understand that money is a tool, and if I want to get the best out of the tool, I need to learn how to use the tool, and I don't have to judge the tool. And in fact, because we've universally agreed that it replaces barter, it's the way that we exchange and store value. It's the only tool we use. Okay, we've got Bitcoin and gold and silver, but they're forms of money. And this is my mission, my life's mission. I've put 19 years into this, and I'm going to put another 50 years into it. And they cancel me for it, and they try and silence me for it. Although, weirdly, Eaton have invited me to do a talk on it.
Wow.
Yeah, so in January, I'm talking at Eaton. Hello, this is Rob Moore.
Wow. You're gonna
fuck
it.
The system.
Money's a spectrum, so I guess, was there a point, or was there an amount of money where actually it changed for you specifically, and everything from that has just been kind of bonus?
Yeah, so there is an amount for most people, 99.9%, but it's not a million because a million isn't enough. You know, Warren Buffett probably became a millionaire in his late 20s, early 30s, but with inflation now, that might be the equivalent of 50 million. So I became a millionaire age 31. I was pissed off because I wanted before 30. And I missed it by like 9 months, and I felt like a failure. But I also remember thinking, well, I wanted this for... Well, I actually wanted to be a millionaire when I was 6 years old. Like, who wants to be a zeroer? No one. Like, if we're honest about it, And we don't worry about the judgment or the religion or the parenting or the culture or the society. We transcend that judgment. I think we all want to be wealthy and live a wealthy life. In fact, if you study properly, the word wealthy derives from weal, and weal means well-being. So to be rich is to live well, because you have money to pay for good healthcare. You know, if you got stage 4 cancer tomorrow and you're a millionaire, you can travel around the world and find the very best doctor who's got the highest chance of alleviating that. Or you can't get in the NHS, so you can pay for private. You know, this all costs money. So I've forgotten your question.
How much? What is? I think
how much is enough?
Yeah.
10 million.
10 million in the bank.
No, 10 million liquid.
Okay.
You do not even want $3,000 in the bank, Jack. Like, we need to have a conversation. There's three types of millionaire, I think. There's net worth millionaire, there's liquid millionaire, and then there's fuck you millionaire. So net worth millionaire is actually the definition, which is your total assets minus your liabilities is a million or more. But the thing is, if you've got a 3 million real estate portfolio with 2 million's worth of mortgages, you are a net worth millionaire, but you're only a paper millionaire and you're not a liquid millionaire. Then some people go to me, oh, Rob, it's all about being a cash millionaire. No, that's stupid. If you're a cash millionaire, your money's going down 5% a year in the bank. Why would you want a million in cash? You want minimum money in the bank. So mark my words on this. You want liquidity millions, not cash millions. And for me, liquidity is, can I get the money in 3 to 5 days? Because if everything goes to shit, I've probably got 3 to 5 days. I've not got 3 to 5 months. It's going to take me 3 to 5 months to liquidate my property portfolio. I've got 345 properties. If I wanted to liquidate that, it's going to take me 3, 6, 9 months. If I could do it a bit quicker, but I'd have to take a haircut on it. But my gold, my silver, my Bitcoin and other physical assets, you know, my stock market, my S&P 500, my FTSE 100, in 3 days, it's in. I've got it. So liquid millionaire is level two. Fuck you, millionaire, is like millions raining in from multiple streams of income. Like, you don't give a shit if you've got a few million cash in the bank, because 5% inflation is nothing to you because you've got lots of it. You've got assets everywhere. And 10 million liquid, TML, 10 million liquid. I got there age 35, which was nearly 11 years ago. And that was like, okay, this is big now. You know, I've got 7 supercars. And of course, they judge me for that. But I'd rather have 7 than 6. And by the way, all my supercars are just the cars I dreamed to have as a kid. Aren't we taught to make your dreams come true? Isn't that what being successful is? I don't tell anyone else how many supercars they should have. But I wanted the Ferrari Testarossa. I wanted the Lamborghini. And I got them through hard work and being an entrepreneur for 20 years. But when you're 10 million liquid, you can do what you want, when you want, where you want, with who you want. And then that is enough. But it's not a million. A million is not enough.
So 2025... what's the quickest, smartest way to become a millionaire?
It's the wrong question. The right question is, what's the best way to become a millionaire for the long term? Okay. Everyone wants the quickest way. You know, if you wanted to get laid really quick, that's probably not smart. You're probably going to come back with a disease. Yeah? Because you could get laid super quick if you wanted, if you just had some cash. But yeah. Zach knows a lot about you.
Too much.
That's for the anniversary episode. Yeah. You know, as someone who's just had a child and picked the right woman, you take your time over that. So when it comes to business and the best ways to make money in 2025, I think you want to think about the following. What could you enjoy doing that didn't feel like work, even if it's hard? Because we all like things that are easy, but they're not great. But what about that thing that you like and it's hard, but you do it anyway? Like maybe if you like fighting, or you like writing code, and the harder it is, the more you like it. So if you can find something like that, a passion you can turn into a profession, I'd say that's stage one. Number two is, you've got to be able to leverage the internet. You know, whether it's social media or AI is the big thing I'm talking about for 2025. Because if you're a restaurant, you've got a very small number of customers, you've got a very high overhead. You're relying on staff, you're reliant on stock, which goes out of date very quickly and can get stolen. You know, the cash can get stolen by the cashiers. Whereas if you're online, you don't have to have any staff. You don't rely on footfall. You've got a global audience, and actually probably the highest speed, lowest friction, because I like to reword it like that, rather than quickest and easiest, highest speed, lowest friction. It's probably information, content into cash flow. You know, my Disruptors podcast makes me 2 to 3 million a year. I don't even try, because it's like my seventh biggest thing that I do, because I've trained in businesses and real estate. So there are some things that you make money that are easier than others. My real estate portfolio makes me a lot more now, but it took a lot more time to build. But my real estate portfolio will outlive me. Mm. Maybe my content won't. But anyone starting a business in 2025, take what you know and turn it into cash flow. Mentoring, masterminding, a membership site, I have rob.team. We've got nearly 10,000 members there. And then don't fucking give up. Because too many people quit. Oh, I didn't get virality in 3 weeks, I quit. Oh, you know, I didn't sell my first set of stock, I quit. I've got this guy that I have mentored. I've mentored hundreds of thousands of people. But this one guy, I'd never known someone like this. 19, starting his fourth business, like that was smart. And he'd given every business about 3 or 6 months. And you know, all these people saying, oh yeah, you know, quiet quitting or quitting is good. Winners actually do quit. Not, winners quit the right things, but never quit the wrong things.
Interesting. You mentioned something then that I was going to ask you about, but it makes sense to ask it now. You were talking, I can't remember what podcast it was, about the content you've put out. You saw a real peak whenever it was the most controversial. And when you went controversial guest, controversial guest, controversial guest, that was the biggest peak in performance. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I believe life exists in a paradox where nothing is good or bad, right or wrong. Everything has equal upside and downside. That's a belief that I come from. I've not seen this disproven yet, even in the most extreme cases. So I've had some very controversial guests. David Icke blew up and then blew my channel up, as in shadow banned for months. Andrew Tate blew me up and then blew my channel up, as in shadow banned for months. All the talk about COVID and lockdown, when it all started, blew me up, then blew me up and I've been shadow banned. I haven't been fully cancelled yet. I mean, I'm trying, but what? Why not me? What's wrong with me? Yeah. But I've had loads of shadow bans just for speaking my mind. And I'm not really extreme, I don't think. I just want people to have a better relationship with money. And I just want to share the truth of my opinion, which is a paradox because it's my opinion, but I believe it to be true. And as we were talking about before, Jack, I refuse to dilute my opinion, because I think if you dilute your opinion, you dilute your opinion of yourself. One of my mentors, John DeMartini, said to me, Rob, if you have a choice between pissing yourself off and pissing someone else off, choose them every time. And as a people-pleasing conflict avoider, as I've been most of my child and early adult life, that's hard. Mm-hmm. I'd rather stay silent, take the feedback, you know, not cause conflict, and then you hold it in, and then it becomes dis-ease, which then can manifest in disease. So I'm not controversial for the sake of it. I don't think what I say at all is controversial. You know, the banks are a for-profit corporation, and their motive is maximizing shareholder value, and they are not a public service, and they are not in your best interest. What's controversial about that? It's just a statement of fact. And if I was a multi-billionaire and I'd been making billions banking that way, might I resist changing to be a not-for-profit humanitarian service? Yeah, I might have some resistance about that too. If I, you know, I like to be in the bank monopoly. And everyone thinks all the things I say are really controversial. And everyone thinks all the things I say are really controversial. And all these guests like Andrew Tate and Katie Hopkins and Jordan Peterson and David Icke that I've had are controversial. Well, I think more and more now, some people believe the things they've said are true.
Mm.
So I just be me.
You didn't mention Chris Eubank in the list of
natural
guests. Where would you class, what category would you put that in if there is one?
Weird. The most weird. So for anyone who didn't watch the Chris Eubank episode, it's the second most discussed episode I've done after Andrew Tate's. And I get stopped all the time now. You know, it's funny because I have 345 properties and I run the UK's largest property training company. And twice a year publicly, I'd get stopped. And then I launched my podcast, and then twice a month. And then I launched my YouTube, and then twice a week. And now four times-ish, maybe more every time I go out. And no one says, oh yeah, you're the guy that's been an entrepreneur for 20 years. And you're the guy that's built this, you know, 250 million in sales organization. You built the UK's largest property training company. They go, oh, you interviewed Andrew Tate. You interviewed Chris Eubank. Or I love your content. So Chris Eubank was the best episode I've ever done for growing as an interviewer. And if I came in here and I stunk of weed and the weirdest aftershave, and I had a bag full of cash, and I wouldn't even look at you, and then when I did look at you, I grunted at you and I was aggressive at you and I trolled you, and you'd be like, what the fuck's this guy on? And you'd find it very weird. But afterwards, you'd be like, yeah, okay, I can probably handle difficult guests now. So, yeah, it was, I mean, really, people just have to watch it. You can't explain it. I don't know. I know he was stoned. His son had not recently passed away. And I think I handled it pretty well. I was pretty sympathetic. I pushed back at him at the end. I let him say all of his shit and look me in the face and grunt at me and growl at me and all this shit. I think he was going through some sort of, maybe his mental health wasn't great then, I don't know, which is why I'm always respectful when I talk about it. But yeah, we're going to do a round two.
Oh shit.
Yeah, you're damn fucking right.
You prepared? You ready for it?
I mean, how'd you get ready for that? were you ready for the birth of your child?
I've been practicing.
Yeah. Obviously not very fucking good. Very well. Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of thing where I know what questions I'll ask. But, you know, I could interview Putin now. Fucking bring it on. Thanks to Chris Eubank and what he put me through in that interview. Whereas I would always avoid the hard question, always want to get on really well. You know, we've gotten well at the start, and I want to get on well. I think you've noticed that about me. But I can play the game now, and if there has to be... You know, I suppose a bit more respect Piers Morgan. Like, I'm not like him, but, you know, I respect the fact that he can be aggressive if he needs to be. And I know a lot of people don't like that about him, but a lot of people do. So, yeah, Chris Eubank, round two, bring it on.
And if you interview Putin, what's the first question you're going to ask him?
I'd probably want to know what his relationship with Donald Trump is really like. Because I actually reckon they've got a respect and they're probably going pretty good. I reckon.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what he really thinks about capitalism. Yeah, I'd like to know that. I personally would not want to be in a communist state. As an entrepreneur, it's the opposite of everything you believe in. I'd love to know what he thinks about entrepreneurship. Yeah.
Entrepreneurship.
I'd love to know if he really does poison people.
I don't know if he'd tell you that.
Yeah, I don't think he would.
And
if you got that out of him.
Well, I'll probably never come back. Yeah. Do you remember Rob Moore?
Yeah. I remember him well.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurship, we were talking about LinkedIn and entrepreneurship, and it can be, it's a bit of a dirty word now, so you think of like scam, like are people just trying to grab my money, all of these things. So what is wrong with the industry at the moment and who is wrong with it?
Well, I mean, it depends how you define the industry. Do you mean being an entrepreneur or do you mean... selling information? What do you mean?
I mean people trying to make quick money and exploiting others by taking that money.
Well, anything can be looked at from two vantage points. If you are unexploitable, no one will exploit you. Just like if you have high self-worth, you'll never end up marrying a narcissist. Only if you have low self-worth could a narcissist ever get in, because you'll see the red flag straight away. So generally, people who succumb to schemes and scams are people who are not very educated about money. They can't control their money emotions. They're failing at money, so they go for something through desperation. Now, that's not to say we shouldn't have rules and regulations and we shouldn't push back against schemes and scams. But if we all take collective responsibility, no one can scam us.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example of this. If we all stop paying our TV license to the BBC today, their pants would be around their ankles and they would be begging us, and their service would improve, and whatever we wanted, it would be a service, because it's supposed to be a neutral institution and it is not. But people don't have the courage to vote with their feet. They don't have the courage to share their opinion. They have the courage to troll and hate on people like you and I who speak on social media. But the best thing you can do is vote with your money. So if you believe a cashless society is bad, only pay where they take cash and refuse to buy anything from a big corporation that doesn't take cash, or go in and pay cash anyway and Facebook Live it and see their response. So it's like with voting. You know, if we all went to London and protested on something we believe is against our human rights, then things would change. But people don't have enough courage. And so no one can scam you if you're unscammable. And it's the... Sorry, you wanted to ask again about
that. Well, I was going to say, so it sounds like what you're saying is there are no contrapreneurs. It's just more money illiterate people, like people that are idiots.
There are, of course, contrapreneurs. Of course. But there are also entrepreneurs who are just starting, who don't have the systems and processes yet. Or they're trying, but it's hard for them. Yeah, there's schemes and scams every fucking day. I've got 100 staff. We've got 15 people in our finance department. There are elaborate scams every fucking day trying to get money out of our finance department. Yeah, there are. But if you educate yourself around money, you will be unscammable. I like to try and own what I can own. If anyone ever scams me, my fault. If anyone ever fucks me, my fault. Good on them. They were smarter than me. Bring it on next time.
That's the wrong mindset. Non-victim mindset.
There we go.
You've sold to a lot of people. We're a selling business. What have you learned about selling that is universally true?
Whilst people might not like to be sold to, everyone loves to buy. I've definitely learned that. I've learned that sales makes the world go round. And I admire more that the American culture is that a sales job is a great career and that it has value in the world. And I don't like the British culture of looking down their nose at salespeople. I think we should all support salespeople starting out in business, because without salespeople, nothing in the economy moves. If anyone cold calls me and they're good, I'm going to try and hire them and I'm going to let them do their pitch. But they've got to be good. If they can't get me in the first 3 seconds, they need to work on their hook. But I'll always give people time if they're good. And we need to respect salespeople. It's one of the hardest jobs in the world because you have to get the most amount of rejection, and rejection hurts. And it's what we all avoid. And that's why most people are shit at selling, because they're avoiding rejection. So the ones that are good face rejection in the face. And those people should be respected.
What does the wrong cold call sound like, though?
The best cold call I've ever had was, "Hello, this is a cold call." And then he just went quiet.
It might have been. That's how we got you on the podcast, Rob.
I've had "Hello, this is a cold call. Hang up now if you want, but I think you'll love what I've got. Can I have 30 seconds of your time?" By the way, as well, if anyone does do cold calling or sales, if you ask for 30 seconds, don't take 5 minutes. It's one of my bugbears. Do you know how many people a day come to me and say, "Can I have 5 minutes of your time?" And they want 30. So now I just believe if anyone says, "Can I have 5 minutes?" I think, well, you actually want 30 and you don't respect my time. So no. So ask for the time you need. Make sure it's a benefit to them. Because if you want 5 minutes of my time, that's a benefit to you because you want my time. If you tell me why 5 minutes with you is a benefit to me, I'm going to give you 5 minutes. But then if you take 10, you're not getting any more. And then if you've taken five and then it's going well, say, "Look, I said I'd ask for five. I've taken five. So if you want to end this now, that's cool. Or if you like this, let's carry on." And get the permission.
So this is a really good question, because I think there's like levels to mentorship, and it's like somebody that's just starting out shouldn't be banging on your door. I don't think it's a money thing for you. So what could somebody offer you that would be worth 5 minutes, 30 minutes of your time? Like, if it's not cash, what are the things that people could do in return where you're like, "That's actually something I'd be up for. That would be worth it."
Are you just doing this so then you can fucking pitch me at the end?
Yeah. We're closing your own.
You've got that real, like, cool, like, disarming look.
You've got a contract with
it. Yeah. That door's locked. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. I'll answer two questions in one. Something else I've really learned about sales is value-based selling. And, people cannot resist buying the things they value the most. So I value growth and progress the most in my life. Obviously, I value my family really highly. So if anything benefits my family or my own growth and progress, you have my ear. So one of the best ways to sell to someone is to find out what's most important to them. And then when they tell you, you link and change your pitch to meet their highest values. You can't do that on a cold call. You need to get in there and get conversing. But as soon as you can, you just say, "Hey, look, what's most important to you in X? What's most important to you in being a podcaster? What's most important to you in generating leads? And then the answer that they give you will naturally be their highest values, and then you link your pitch to that. So how you sell to me is you find out my highest values, and I've just told you growth and progress. So if you can help me grow my podcast and grow my business and, you know, grow and progress in my life, as long as your product or service is something that I need, you've obviously got to find the need. I interviewed Dan Pena, who's this, you know, really ranty, angry American, Scottish. I don't know what he is, but he's a fascinating guy. And he said, there has to be a need first. And when I've worked out the need, not you, me, when I've worked out the need, I am not leaving until you buy. But there has to be a need.
Wow. Then he said,
your mom should have aborted you.
Yeah. And he added the C word at the end. Yeah. You should clip in a couple of Dan Pena shouts. They're great.
So what do you find are the biggest, the values there? Because obviously you're selling on a daily basis, we're selling. What do you, when you think about the human being and psychology, what do you typically find drives that need?
Well, it varies from person to person. And the way you find out is by asking them what's most important to you in. So what's most important to you in your life, your whole life in general?
You, obviously. Family, I've got to say that live on air. happiness, I think. Being content, those kind of things, like moving forward, gaining momentum, those kind of things.
Okay. And in your business, what's most important to you?
Growth, stability.
Okay. So happiness, contentment, growth and stability are the key words I've picked out. If I've got something that I know you need, I'm selling it based on happiness, growth, stability, and it's probably going to be quite hard for you not to buy as long as I de-risk it for you. That's the other thing, isn't it? In the world we're in right now, you called it the contrapreneur, I think. There are more schemes and scams because we've got more apps, we've got the internet, we've got higher speed to bank accounts. So we have to be more vigilant as a human. So I have to find a need, I have to find a value, and then I have to de-risk it for you. Whether that's through a guarantee or an easy way to pay that doesn't make you feel that you're at risk, or proof that you're making a smart decision. I think if you tick those boxes, you're going to sell well.
Have you noticed, because of TikTok culture, when there's that kind of get rich quick thing going on, that the property training course is tougher because people aren't willing to put in the long game efforts?
Not for me. So right now, I know my company can do more. So I'm not really looking at how many other businesses are struggling, or, you know, how many other competitors there are or aren't, or what is going on in the market. I'm focusing on what I do and what I do well. And I think if people did that more, they'd grow their business. Because let's be honest, most people listening and watching, they're nowhere near saturated their market. So until you actually have saturated your market, i.e. you are Tesco, because getting market share from Tesco, their probably only way is to buy Sainsbury's. But everyone knows Tesco. Until you're Tesco and you've saturated, focus on yourself and focus on your own growth. And we peaked at 25-ish million in sales, and we're probably at 22 million-ish in sales in my training businesses. And I easily think we could be 30 million-ish in sales in the UK. We could do another 50 in America. So we could be 80 million within 3 years. So why do I give a fuck about, you know, the odd contrapreneur or these trends of get rich quick or whatever? In fact, they probably help me, because if there's all these schemes and scams out there, when people come to me and they've been screwed, they can learn how to do it the right way. So I don't really concern myself. I don't really watch much social media. I create rather than consume. So the 2 hours a day I might put into content, probably 1 minute of that is just replying to haters on LinkedIn. Thank you, fuck you, thank you, fuck you, thank you, fuck you, thank you, fuck you. And it, by the way, just so everyone knows, because I do light the torch paper on LinkedIn, because I think there's so much shite on there. I don't use AI, and it is me in the comments.
Wow.
But I just fucking, that's my new hobby, actually. I think I was talking to the podcast studio guy, I don't really have a hobby, but actually chatting to my haters. that would be a hobby. So focus on your own game. If everyone else is scamming, then just be great. And look, we've all, through humanity, been vulnerable to get rich quick. TikTok hasn't created it. Do you remember Tulip Mania? There was a time when a tulip was more expensive than a house through Tulip Mania because of how wild the prices went because of Tulip Mania. We see anything going to the moon, we all get FOMO, we all want a piece of it, and we all lose our critical faculties because we're emotional. This is why I said everything exists in a paradox. And Warren Buffett said, if you can't learn to manage your emotions, you won't manage your money. So there are no, we're just always susceptible to get rich quick. I think the key is help people get rich as quick as possible, but also realistic. I've been doing this 19 years, so no one can deny what we are. I'm get rich long, not get rich quick.
Mm.
Get rich quicker. Because let's be honest, is it a scam to invest in a course with an entrepreneur that's $2,000 and self-learn on the internet, or go to college, get $45,000 in debt after 3 years, not get a job for a year, start on $26,000 basic, be paying the student loan off for 20 or 30 years, and make other people rich? Which is the bigger scam? I mean, if you said to me, Rob, there's $45,000 here, put it into self-education with mentors and millionaires, or here's $45,000 a year here, go and get a degree in architecture, which is what I did, which would I do? I'd go straight to the people who are rich. You know, I've done 2 million quid in courses. You know, I've invested in courses. I've had millionaire, billionaire, multi-billionaire mentors. I still have mentors to this day. 3 billionaires have given me mentoring in the last 6 weeks. But, you know, you do economics at college and the tutor's on $40,000 a year teaching Blackboard economics, the theory of money. Why would you want to learn the theory of money? Surely you want to learn how to fucking make money. Anyway, I can't remember the question.
Don't worry. You mentioned a few things that have been interesting. So it sounds like you've got quite a diverse portfolio of different things that you do. And also some of the stuff that you're talking about as time moves on. I suppose if someone did make £1 million and they came to you not as the property trainer, but as a friend or something, and they said, how do I make this work for me now? I don't want to work again. I want to make this £1 million work for me. What advice would you give them?
Okay. So remember I said £1 million is not enough. So if someone wants to not work again, the first thing I'd say is you need to turn that million into 10 because it's TML, motherfucker. It's not 1 million, it's 10 million. So they come to me with £1 million. They say, I never want to work again. I say, why? I want to know why they don't want to work again. I want to know how they got the million. If they got the million hustling and working, I know they know how to hustle and work. If they got it as an inheritance, I know they know fuck all about money, and that's a danger. So let's say they inherited it. They've got to spend at least 5% of that learning how to manage it and invest it and going on courses and getting good education. Because actually getting given money without the knowledge and skills and downsides and graft and hustle and the wilderness you're in at times. I'm friends with James Watt, a brew dog. He said virtually every week for years we were this close to going bust. And he said, and I fucking loved it. So you can only learn that by doing it and going through it. So they've got to do at least 5% on themselves, which is $50,000. If they've already done that, they're going to do that anyway, because they know that. Let's assume they're pretty smart, they're pretty balanced. They know that actually they're going to continue to run a business until they're at 10 million liquid. The first thing you'd never do is put it all in one thing. All these clowns putting all their net worth in a crypto, like not even Bitcoin, a meme coin. I met some guy, he'd made about 20 million on some shy coin. He was fucking arrogant. He bought us all dinner, but not in a, you know, I'm a gentleman way, but in a fucking lob his dick out on the table by dinner kind of way. He was spitting. He was like, and spitting into the flower bed. He was 20 fucking years old. And, you know, I've been doing this back then 18 years. And he's like, why are you in real estate? Why are you in this? Why are you in that? None of these are as good as this coin. None of these are as good as this coin. And I said, well, you know, you make your money, yeah, by being focused, but you protect your wealth by diversification. He's like, that's bollocks. Why would I put my money in anything else when I get the best return here? 6 months later, fucking broke, down KFC, licking people's fingers for food. Fuck. Broke, gone, fucked. So do not put that million into one thing. So probably, and it depends on the person, I'd need a bit more time to consult with them, find out their values, but probably 20% in the S&P 500, FTSE 100. Vanguard's done 23% last year. Now, it might not do 23% next year. I'm not giving advice. I'm sharing my experience. But the stock market's done very well over the last, I think it's 12% over the last 8 years. I normally go at 5 to 8% a year. So 20% in there. Now, my favorite holding strategy is BHD. Trading is a mug's game. BHD is buy, hold, die. Warren Buffett says my favorite holding period is forever. Warren Buffett does not draw dividends. He just reinvests everything. And then if he needs money, he just takes a bit of the capital out because income tax is more penal than capital gains tax. And drawing dividends delays compounding. So I'd say take 20%-ish, well, 5% on yourself. You are your best asset. Invest in yourself wisely. You pay yourself the best return. 20% S&P 500, FTSE 100. Fuck IFAs, you know, fuck brokers. I know they're only trying to do a job. So, but for you, you should learn how to invest your own money. You know, back in the day, women used to learn home economics when it was really valuable to keep a home. Why are we not learning how to manage our own money? Well, because the banks don't want you to know. So get a Charles Stanley or a Vanguard account. Invest yourself in the S&P 500, FTSE 100 using the Vanguard Life Strategy Fund. That's 20%. I'd probably put another 10% into gold and silver because that's God's money. That's real money. It's a form of money and it beats inflation, whereas cash is the lowest form of money. People think it's the highest form of money. So probably lock 10% in there. I'd probably put 2 to 5% in Bitcoin. If you know about it a lot and you've got a passion, I'd might maybe eke that up a bit. I'd put 5 to 10 into physical assets like if there's art you're into. I like watches, so Rolex Daytona. Just buy loads of Rolex Daytonas, especially the steel ones or the all gold ones. Then I'd probably put 40% into real estate, maybe 50% into real estate, a bigger chunk, because all right, everyone's going on about how Bitcoin's now the sixth largest asset. And it's over $100 a coin, but it's not even 30 years old. Whereas in 1088, you can track back and look at property prices. And the whole of the UK land and property in 1088 was a million. Now a fucking car space in Chelsea might be a million. That tells you what property does. Well, it also tells you what inflation does. And then the rest I'd probably use for business. Here's the thing, and you guys should probably know this, but everyone talks about investing money and they never think about buying leads or investing it into marketing. I mean, talk about getting rich the quickest. Out of everything I've said, that is slow compared to launching a business and running ads and buying leads. That's the quickest way to make money.
Rob, I could talk to you all day on this. If people are wanting to learn more about money and kind of become more conscious of money beliefs and get better when it comes to business and entrepreneurship, apart from your own books, what are the books that they should be reading to teach themselves?
Why the fuck would you say apart from my own books?
Because I knew that you'd say your own books and we're going to put them in the YouTube description anyway. So apart from that, what are the books that you'd be like, this?
Apart from Money by Rob Moore.
Yeah.
Apart from Money by Rob
Look at the
Moore.
Camera and say that, Rob.
And M-O-N-E-Y.
Amazon.com/.
Yeah. And apart from Money Matrix by Rob Moore, and apart from More Money Secrets on YouTube and podcast by Rob Moore, I mean, what's left?
Well, what's left?
Look, this depends on context, because if someone's been learning about money for 10 years and they read Think and Grow Rich and Richest Man in Babylon and Rich Dad Poor Dad, they'll get nothing from it. But if they know nothing about money, Richest Man in Babylon, Rich Dad Poor Dad, Think and Grow Rich, they are game changers if you know nothing about money. If you want if you want the best of something at the beginner level, but something with more depth, that's how I write. I write for all stages. Rich Dad, Poor Dad was a game changer for me. Think and Grow Rich, I still use things from those books today. But if I read them today, they'd be like children's books. Yeah. And by the way, I can give you 11 more minutes.
11 more minutes?
Yeah.
Right.
Because I know, I'll jump in a taxi straight after for my next show.
Let's fucking do this. Yeah. Right. When you think about starting out in business, and when we look back at younger Rob, how was your relationship with rejection changed?
So I guess, like most humans, I fucking hate rejection. I don't think anyone actually loves it. I think it's a human trait to hate it, but I think you can learn to face it. So I don't like rejection. I never have, and I never will. I've just learned that it's a necessary stage towards success. You cannot avoid it. We talked about stoicism before the cameras went on. Like, you're gonna die. Life is hard. Okay, right, now let's go. And I was always the naive optimist, wanting to be happy, running away from conflict, trying to please everyone. And, you know, that comedians can be like that. And oh, yeah, you know, Rob's happy and positive. But you're not grounded. So knowing that life is hard, know I'm going to get rejected every day. Go and get rejected every day. Don't fucking take it personally. If you reject me, you don't know what happened to me when I was 7. And if I'm feeling shame linked to things that happened to me when I was 7, you didn't do that to me and you didn't even fucking know. That's just my baggage. You're rejecting me because I haven't done it right. Or it's just not right now, or the timing is wrong. So I guess I've downplayed the meaning of rejection because I used to take it very personally. If I tried to pitch you something and you rejected it, you're not rejecting 7-year-old me who was living upstairs in his dad's pub pretty much alone and feeling a disconnection from the world. You're not rejecting the fattest kid in school, age 12, getting rejected by girls and all of his friends. And these were the two kids that I were at 7 and 12. You don't even fucking know. You're just like, nah, not for me now. Too busy. Bye. And so we need to just fucking remember what rejection is. It's just wrong time, wrong place, or next time, keep going.
How did you learn that?
Well, you can be a blackboard economist, or you can start a business and learn what it's like about making and taking and managing money. By the way, the best personal development ever, the best spiritual development ever, the best healing content ever, the most woo-woo lessons ever are running a business. And no one fucking talks about it. You learn everything running a business. So business taught me, if I got rejection and stopped, I wouldn't make the sale. And Dan Pena reckons you need, 14 or 18 rejections. I think Dan Priestley, he says it's something like, it went from a 9-time convincer to a 15-time convincer. So you have to go through more of it. So yes, I read books. Yes, I went on courses, and they're all helpful to learn the theory of the things you don't know. But there's no better lesson than just fucking bang. You do cold calling. When you've done 1,000 cold calls, it's never personal anymore.
Yeah, I agree. So the stoicism, you come across like an unshakable man. What would you say has been the toughest moment in business for you?
Lockdown was the toughest for us. We had 15 years straight, 20%, 50% growth year on year on year on year. Everything we touched turned to gold. We grew to the biggest property training company in no time. Everything I'd touched went viral. And then lockdown happened. We had 100 staff, had to have a meeting with my MD and my business partner in the kitchen, hiding away from everyone with the list of the 100 staff going, oh, we've got to let them go, we've got to let them go, we've got to let them go. That was always a moment I never wanted to face as an entrepreneur, you know, having to let 2/3 of your staff go. That was always the biggest fear for me. That and going bust, two biggest fears. I had to fucking face both of them. Now, as it turns out, we got nowhere near going bust, but that's because we're good with storing cash. It's because my business partner's good with diversification. And it's because we made some hard fucking decisions. All right, then there was You know, they brought them back, didn't they? And, you know, there was all the support from the government. Everyone thought, oh, this is great at the time, free money. Then they spunk a trillion on all of this and now no one wants to fucking work and now we're going to be paying for it for 10 fucking years. Let me just say a warning to everyone. When something looks good, remember there's a downside to it and you either pay now or you pay later. But you always pay. Everything has a cost. And I'll admit, I was like, yeah, free money, COVID loans, bounce back loans, fucking let's have it all. The economy is fucked and it will be fucked for 10 years. And inflation was double digits after lockdown because they pumped a trillion into paying for this fucking imaginary thing. So I can't remember your question.
It was about the hardest moment in business. You were talking about
lockdown
and letting people go.
Yeah.
Position you didn't expect.
Yeah.
That feel like?
I fucking loved it.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I hate pain and I love it. I hate shame and I love it. The feeling of shame boils my blood where it feels like acid. My face can go red. You've got this huge pit in your stomach and it is the most motivating emotion that I can feel. Like, if I'm putting anything off, as soon as I feel shame, I'm fucking getting it done. So men should tap into that more instead of trying to avoid it. Because men are supposed to have it hard. I think women aren't supposed to have it as hard. I think, you know, a lot of pain and shame in a woman makes them more masculine. A lot of pain and shame in a man makes them more masculine. So all this bullshit about, you know, if you're fifth, it's as good as first, Johnny, you'll all get a fucking prize. You know, and there are 59 genders. My 12-year-old son came back from school and he said, Daddy, we've been taught that there are 59 genders. I said, but there are two sexes, male and female, and you are male. So all this fucking wokeism about avoiding pain and everything else, no. You are not a man, a real man, until you've experienced pain and trauma and loss. Andrew Tate said to me, Rob, you are not a man until your dad has died. And I remember, like, being triggered by that because I thought, wait a minute. You know, I've navigated this business for nearly 20 years. No one's been going as long as us, that's as big as us. You know, we've done a lot of good in the world. I've made millions that I've paid in taxes. I've made millions that I've given to charity. I think my books are better than the school system around financial education. You know, I've had to fire loads of staff. I've had really difficult times. My dad's been really fucking ill. I've had difficult times in relationships. I'm a fucking man. What do you know? But then the more I thought about it, I thought every hard challenge I've had has made me stronger. And my dad is still here. And that's probably now my biggest fear. I would say number one biggest fear, someone I love dying. Number two biggest fear, going bust, you know, or losing everything, which, by the way, that's a really good fear. I could never be a contrapreneur. I just don't have it in me because I fear it too much. So people who are contrapreneurs, they should have more fear because, you know, the whole American thing, I'll go bust again, but go bust again, go bust again. I don't believe in that. No, never go bust. What about never going bust? What about never going down and taking shareholder money and supplier money? What about that? What's wrong with that? So maybe when my dad dies, that'll be the final making of me being a man. But I think being a man is where you can be courteous and kind and polite when there's fucking shit going on in your life, where you can, you know, the 300, and, you know, you stand there with your shield. And you protect your family, your children, your staff, your customers, your clients. You're taking all the fucking arrows for them. And, you know, I know I do that. And so I feel good about that.
Rob, thank you so much for joining us. I've absolutely loved this conversation. I said to you earlier that the man you are on camera and off camera is the same. It's brilliant. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Zach and Jack.